We at the Staggering Stories podcast would like to appeal to you. Please, please don't stop listening to us.
Please.
We'll cease to exist. Please. You did it to Crumbly. We haven't seen him in a month.
He's gone.
Please don't make us disappear. Welcome, welcome, welcome to this in the latest of a long line of Staggering Stories podcasts.
Hooray!
I'm Fake Keith.
I'm Adam.
I'm Jean.
I'm Asda Man.
And I, yes, I am...
a nasty person who told off the dog.
You did what?
He told her off.
She kept barking, just continuous barking.
She was talking, and you silenced her.
This is why she's sitting near me now.
Yeah, look at her, she's going rolling over.
Evil man.
Get that shock collar.
No, over him.
Over him.
What?
Actually.
And now, without further ado, it's the news with El Presidente.
Woo!
Doctor Who news.
Yay!
Hugo Award nominations.
Who's Hugo?
I don't know. It looks like the TARDIS has landed not just in time and space, but also on the prestigious Hugo Award shortlist.
Ooh.
Two episodes from Shuta Gatwa's first season of Doctor Who have been nominated for the Best Dramatic Presentation Short Form category. RTD2 will be getting two chances to win as both stories spilled from his pen, namely Dot and Bubble and 73 Yards.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent choices.
Mm-hmm.
The awards will be announced on the 16th of August, where Doctor Who will be up against two episodes of Star Trek : Lower Decks, plus an episode each from Fallout and Agatha All Along.
So both Doctor Light episodes have been nominated.
That's typical.
Yeah, right, yeah.
They were both excellent episodes.
At least the last one was Doctor Heavy that got nominated. Was it Heaven Sent?
We saw that in America, didn't we?
Any more news, Scott?
Yes, we do. We have Harry Potter news.
Oh, right.
The TV series ensnares actors.
Ooh. Mm.
Accio Casting News.
Accio.
Sorry.
Did you say Accio?
Casting.
Accio.
Accio. What is wrong with me?
It's
did
a
you
spell.
Not listen in
it's
basic?
Spell.
Oh.
Oh, no. Sorry, Addy, if you're listening. Accio. Casting news. The first cast members for the Harry Potter TV series have been contracted for the next decade of their lives.
Ooh.
It's worse than Marvel.
Nick Frost will be getting uncomfortably fond of magical creatures as Rubens Hagrid.
Mm.
Janet McTeer, who played Jessica Jones' mother amongst other roles, might be faking a Scottish accent. She's English. For
Professor McGonagall?
Yes, Professor McGonagall.
Minerva, I believe.
Wait until you see the next name.
Oh, yeah. No. Oh, no. Michael J. Skarinski. No, it's not. We have Papa Enseedu.
Who knows?
Who knows? As Severus Snape.
Severus
Snape.
Your niece is going to just despise you.
She's probably disowned me. I'm no uncle now.
Yeah.
Snape, who is perhaps known for I May Destroy You, Gangs of London, The Lazarus Project TV series, and Black Mirror : Demon 79.
Mm-hmm.
Paul Whitehouse of The Fast Show is the... what's that word?
Curmudgeonly.
Curmudgeonly.
Look, if Keith's telling the words, you know you've got a problem.
As the curmudgeonly caretaker, Angus Filch.
Well done.
Argus.
Argus yep. Filch.
Argus Filch.
If you look at it, there's no N in it.
Oh.
That's the clue.
Sorry, editor.
Apologise to Addy.
Sorry, Addy. Argus Filch, American... oh, no. As the commodity caretaker, Argus Filch. Full stop.
Well done.
American John Lithgow, known to many for giving us his... dick on Third Rock of the Sun.
Yep.
Will be dooning the pointy hat and equally pointy long white
donning.
Donning.
Stop it!
This is the Nazi, not grammar Nazi coming out.
It's only 60 edits in one music. Right, we'll be donning a pointy hat and equally pointy long white beard as Albus Dumbledore.
Well done, you!
The actors playing Harry, Hermione and Ron, see I can do that one, Addy, are still closely guarded secret and it would probably be best for them to keep it that way for as long as possible.
They probably haven't been born yet.
Yeah, probably about.
You did very well there, Scott. Thank very you. Well indeed.
I even pre-read it before we Kate picked me up.
Keith, excellent understanding of the spelling of the word curmudgeonly. Yeah.
It's one I've been practising.
I know.
I'll write it down 100 times now.
You've been calling it me a lot, so I had to look it up.
When I first read books, I didn't know how to pronounce Hermione.
I think lots of people didn't.
I hadn't seen the first film at that point.
Yeah, I'd never met anyone or heard of anyone called Hermione, so I thought it was Hermione.
It's a very old-fashioned name.
Oh, totally. Yeah. I don't associate with the pony sect, so, you know, I'd never met a Hermione.
Jean Marsh!
Dead.
Aww.
Yeah. Jean Lindley Torren.
Yeah.
Where did that come from? Marsh.
Family name, probably.
Yeah. OBE, a proper British institute, has popped off to the Great Theatre in the Sky at age 90.
A good innings.
Not bad.
Yes. Best known for bossing everyone about as Rose in Upstairs, Downstairs, but to many of us will be known for playing three distinct roles in Doctor Who. Joanna in Hartnell's 1965 story, The Crusaders. Mm-hmm. Then again that year as arguable companion, Sarah Kingdom, in 9 of the 12 episodes of The Dalek Master Plan. She then skipped to the final season of Classic Who as villain Morgana, or Morgaine, in the McCoy story of Battlefield. Brilliant! Another Doctor Who connection was her submitting to John Pertwee's Carnal Needs, being married to the third Doctor actor from 1955 to 1960. Film roles over the years included the likes of The Limping Man, The Love Lottery, Unearthly Stranger, should that be Unearthly Child, Dark Places, Return to Oz, and Willow. TV roles included appearing in The Twilight Zone, Danger Man, The Saint, Adamant Lives, Department S, UFO, The Persuaders, The Waltons, Hawaii 50, The Love Boat, Murder, She Wrote, The Tomorrow People, Always
and Breathe.
And she co-created the House of Elliot, didn't she?
Yes.
Upstairs, Downstairs,
and
certainly.
And she co-created Upstairs, Downstairs,
She had an amazing career.
Yes. Yeah.
And she's one of those faces that even, other than Rose, she may not have had any major sort of like leading roles, the leading lady, but she was so well known.
Yeah, she was everywhere. She was in literally everything at the
and
time.
And I did love
she?
Her in Battlefield. Oh, but, so I mean, I love the story, but I loved her in Battlefield.
It reunited her with Nicholas Courtney, because in Master Plan, she was playing his brother, wasn't she? She was playing his sister.
It was sad. Yeah. Any more news?
I have no addendums.
What?
I have an addendum.
Oh, yes.
Ooh.
I do. It's a NASA addendum.
Oh, right.
A real-life addendum.
Indeed. An all-sky infrared camera has been set into motion to continue the search for alien techno-signatures.
Oh, okay.
Can you guess what it's called?
Explorer?
It's called the Dalek.
Really?
Because of its shape.
So cool.
Some backronym going on there.
So is that its real name, or is that what they actually just nicknamed
that's
it?
That's the nickname. They're calling it the Dalek. Unfortunately, it's not.
Data analysis of localised electrokinetic.
Very good.
That's it. Looks really interesting. It does look a bit Dalek-esque.
Doesn't look anything like a Dalek.
Just the head.
It looks like a barbecue you put in the garden. I mean, yes, it looks like a Dalek.
So, yeah, it's just at the dome head of a Dalek, basically. And that is going to go up into space and search for alien techno signatures.
What if we've, as a race, have just accidentally created the Daleks?
Might have.
Yeah. It is going to introduce itself as Dalek to some evil being out there.
So if it does have AI, and it has the ability to reproduce.
Oh, we're in trouble. And that's the end of the news. Right, like pretty much all of you, we have been watching some television.
All right.
We have been watching Doctor Who.
Ooh.
Oh, thanks for music. Okay, let's do a very, very quick thing.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I absolutely loved both these episodes. Does anyone else?
Certainly the second one. The first one was okay.
Yeah, first one was middling.
Yeah.
Loved the second one.
Yeah.
Ditto. I love the second one. First one was okay.
Okay.
It's a few too many unasked questions on the first one.
Husband, is that the same?
I will put the first one slightly more than okay. I love both of them.
Okay.
I've got to wait till the end of the season on how I score them overall.
Yes.
But initially, I've enjoyed both immensely.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Enjoyed both of them.
So the first one, Robot Revolution.
Yes.
Has anybody been watching some of the keyboard warriors go mad over everything?
Yes, I've seen that on YouTube.
Some of them started before it actually aired.
Yeah. Of course.
Dr.
RIP. That was
next one. Hashtag Dr. RIP.
I still have this thing of quite liking to watch it on transmission rather than streaming.
We did with the first one, didn't we?
It's just kind a weird thing. That's how I like to watch them. But I will watch them streaming. So the first one, it's like, oh, isn't it? Was it? Go away! Some of us haven't watched it yet.
No, so basically, we start off with a young couple on a park bench. Oh, it's so romantic. He's a little more into the romance than she... Well, a lot more into the romance than she is.
Yeah.
He's named a star after her.
Mm-hmm.
Miss Belinda Chandra. And we have the first hint... Well, that was the first hint. But we have a couple of hints as to what sort of guy this bloke is. Well, one thing, he insists on calling her Miss because she's not married, which he virtually shouts at her.
Yeah. Later on, we see him
proposed to
her. Oh, yeah. You shouldn't wear clothes like that. You won't be able to, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So basically, Alan is an incel.
He's a controlling...
And for the people online who were like, well, incels were actually founded by a woman. Yes, we know the first incel was a woman, but she hadn't planned it to be the way you lot have taken it for, okay?
Okay. So, I don't know this history.
No, this is more information than
yeah,
I
didn't know.
Initially, I was thinking, Alan sort of reminds me a bit like me, you know, in that I was talking about all the stars and doing this stuff.
Yeah.
I thought that would be a nice idea. I can relate to this guy.
You kind of like, as the story progresses, you realise he really is a little bit of a control freak, megalomaniac. To use a very overused word, he's a sociopath.
So anyway, Miss Belinda Chandra, 17 years later, is a nurse.
Yes.
A damn good one.
By the looks of
it,
yeah. In control of everything.
Yep.
I do love this. So, did someone bite you? Was it another man? Was it a dog?
Was it your wife? And she's leaving for the day after a very long shift and is told that a doctor is looking for her. And, you know, she gets out of the building pretty damn quick because that's probably going to mean extra hours for her.
He then, however, decides to kill anyone in a surgery on life support, etc. by blowing up the entry.
It was an accident.
Oh, that's all right then. He blew the entire hospital.
It wasn't done deliberately, but he shut down.
People on life support.
I did comment that at the time.
We'll give him the benefit of the doubt that the hospital had backup generators.
And then he fixed it very, very quickly.
So he's looking for Belinda.
Yeah.
But we don't know why.
Yeah. No, he's just really looking for her.
But it's timey-wimey. He's got to be a bit careful what he tells her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is it. So I had to rewatch it today because I still wasn't sure why he was looking. But
it's
not stated in the end.
I have a theory, but we'll get towards that towards
because there were several questions left in this one, which will come up hopefully later. Meanwhile,
She's gone home
and some robots have broken in. Some really funky looking 50s style robots.
Initially, ray guns.
Yeah.
Initially, they reminded me of the Hulkbuster.
Oh, a bit like
armor.
That, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The whole look, the robot, the guns,
the spaceship,
even the planet was all really 1950s,
60s retro.
And, didn't the spaceship look like Wallace and Gromit's spaceship?
Yes.
As we pointed out later, when one of the robots gets blown up, is half a robot and it's like the wrong trousers walking around in the
background. You've just got the legs walking around. Yeah.
So anyway, she's taken to this planet.
Hang on. There's one important bit that happened before.
On the journey.
Yes,
which has caused outrage. People have been absolutely
fuming about this. They stepped over the line, quite frankly,
and
with this.
And there has been people who said this is beyond the pale, etc.
It was terrible. I didn't think I'd see the day that Doctor Who did something like that. It was awful.
It was awful. I mean, people literally were losing it over the fact that they killed the cat.
First death of the season, wasn't it?
It was. Yeah.
First death of the season.
And someone pointed out, the robots killed lots and lots of people.
Yeah.
But you're worried about the cat.
Did like about that is in classic Who you'd have the first major special effect death and you'd never see that special effect again.
Yeah.
Case in point, Remembrance of the Daleks.
Yeah.
But the amount of times people died and you saw it in intricate detail.
Yes.
Yeah.
And of course, before, as Belinda's being taken away, a familiar face nips out in her dressing gown.
Her pink, fluffy dressing gown. Mm.
But she did run indoors pretty quickly as soon as she saw the Doctor.
She did. Yes. She didn't want it to be spotted.
Yes. So Mrs. Flood is following.
Yeah, and we had a
swim. There was a theory going around that kind of got blown out of the water with this one, that she is basically cosplaying previous companions. She was wearing Rory's wind cheetah. She was wearing Clara's little outfit with the...
outfit of death.
Yeah, yes. Et cetera, et cetera.
But next one, she does wear something. Is it a Sarah Jane Smith outfit?
She does. But this time, she's jumped genres or jumped universes, and she was dressed as Arthur Dent.
Yeah, I didn't usually recognise the outfit, but it may well be from somewhere in Doctor Who.
Yeah. And she was wearing sort of Romana One's snow coat in one of
the shows. That was the other one, Romana.
Could this be one of Ian Chesterton's house coats that he was wearing around the TARDIS?
It didn't strike me as a fluffy pink housecoat kind of guy.
Barbara's.
Could possibly be,
But she continues to address the audience, doesn't she?
She does. There is no fourth wall for this woman.
Yeah, we have a rather significant, considering the next episode, fourth wall break.
Mm. Yes, is she talking to them?
Yeah.
So, Belinda, spaceship, something wibbly-wobbly happens.
Mm.
They've got this star is named after you certificate.
Mm. Yeah, I think actually the videotape just broke down, so they had to write around it.
Yeah, these robots have her, this star is named Miss Belinda Chandra certificate.
You are Miss Belinda Chandra.
She immediately dobs in Alan and says he's the one you're meant to be looking for.
Go after. I think the actual words, go after, Alan. Yeah.
And something wibbly-wobbly happens, but then they're on the planet,
introduced
to the Doctor with a wonderful little fro and a bunch of rebels.
Bum, bum,
and
bum,
I did like that bit when, 'cause as she came in, I'm like, I'm sure that's Duty.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's the Doctor. Yeah. But that whole bit where he's talking and every ninth word. And you're sitting there going, that one's out of kilter.
Yeah,
I thought it was quite good.
I didn't need the recap because I picked it up as he actually said it. That word's different.
That recap, perhaps some of the younger audience had.
I'm not denying that.
I was sitting there
also
counting on my
fingers.
For her,
so she could then go like...
Nine. So basically, bad things have happened. This AI that looked like something out of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Got a black eye. Literally, when I was bloodshot,
I looked a bit Wizard of Oz.
Yes,
has taken over the world. All these robots, which apart from manically murdering cats, didn't seem that bad, are this AI's gunmen.
And all the humans. Was 10 years ago?
Yep. And all the humans are
slaves.
Yes.
But of course, there is a rebellion.
A resistance.
And wasn't it good to see Pex from Paradise
Towers
getting work?
Yes. I was sure it was him when he first came down that...
I missed that.
There was one of the rebels that had the cut-off tank top. Blonde hair, young guy.
The lead male rebel.
The one that kept saying to her, it's all your fault. Yeah. So in the end, she went, it's all my fault.
Yeah, we first saw him come down that zip line thing.
Yeah, we both thought, Pex. Yeah. Pex.
He's in a Pex.
Pex lives...
Oh dear.
It wasn't, which is a bit of a shame. It would have been fun to bring him back.
Yeah. He's quite a bit older than that now.
Yes. Well, different actor, but the same character.
And what did we think of the shamelessly stolen from Wally floor cleaner?
Polish.
Yeah. I was sure it was saying punish all the time.
That's because your brain is just distorted.
It's hardwired that way.
Well, they were evil, these robots. So. Spanish little robot going around.
Yeah. Little whirly blades.
Was he making static electricity on the floor? Yeah,
yeah. Zap.
The real brain swan in the operation.
Definitely a toy option there, isn't
it? Oh, just a bit. But Belinda, awesome nurse that she is, instead of panicking, she gets stuck in straight away to help the wounded rebels, which was really good.
Because she's a nurse.
Yep. And she sensibly asked, are things the same with these people, and was given a rundown of the
X-ray blanket.
Yeah.
Yeah, she handled...
X-ray blanket was brilliant.
Yes.
Yeah, she handled, I am now on an alien planet, pretty well.
She did. Yeah. Well, it's a case of, I'm either going to scream or I'll get on with it.
You can't do anything about it. This is a problem directly in front of you. Get on with the problem.
But I want that X-ray blanket. That is so cool.
It's going to be good at hospital, but
and that as well, I suppose.
I'm assuming these people injured by shrapnel and things like that, because if they're shot by the robots, they just...
No, we've only seen it on kill setting or disintegrating setting, so perhaps
also,
there is a stun.
Yeah, I mean, if it's blowing up buildings and
You did see that
stuff,
gentleman
and...
with the dislocated arm.
Yes. Yeah.
So related injuries.
He was still lying in bed even after that, though. I don't know quite what else is wrong with him.
He was just tired.
He was told to take it easy for a little while.
So, of course, the Doctor and Belinda save the day, blah-de-blah-de-blah. And then she gets to see the TARDIS.
Ah, well, she saves the day by...
Oh, yes, sorry.
Turns out that Al is actually... AI is Al.
Yeah,
so it turns
out
it's that
AL,
when she said, go get him, they went and got him. But obviously coming through, they hit a bubble and 10 years... So he turned up 10 years before she did. And went, oh, look, all these toys, you're all mine. And basically his ego went out.
I think it was like 1,000 years or something, wasn't it?
It was meant to be 10.
It was 10 mentioned.
So basically he liked his computer games and he took over and he basically treated it like a computer game.
Yeah, his personality took over.
Yeah.
But that makeup, the effect of him when the AI opened, that was really good.
Yeah, a bit Terminator-y.
Very much so,
I was reminded of Superman 3.
Yeah.
Particularly the animation of Belinda being converted.
Yeah.
He had a copy of the certificate. To say that she owned the stuff. And when the two
he didn't have a copy. He
had the same certificate. Had the same certificate, touched antimatter, matter, whatever. I liked the effects, though, when they touched.
Yes.
Fracturing.
Yeah.
And
then
the Doctor going through her timeline.
You could see
timeline.
The Doctor running up behind her. And
As we've been demonstrated before with number 3, number 11, and I think one of the other one. Time doesn't affect Time Lords the same way it does us. Mm-hmm. They sort of have a shortcut, circumvent it. And
like 9 walking through the air.
Yes.
Blades.
That's exactly what I thought at that moment.
Yeah.
I was a bit unclear about that certificate because it looks pristine when Alan's got it, but Belinda's been creasing it and all sorts all the way through the episode. Maybe it's a later one. How does it look better? And when did they even get it?
We still don't know how he gets.
No.
Well, perhaps that's to come.
This may be answered or may just be left hanging.
I feel like it may be left hanging.
Perhaps it was ironed. Perhaps they ironed it.
Saw that one of them went through polish dude and he'd rolled it up.
He did roll it up.
So he clearly ironed it and cleaned it when it was inside.
Maybe lightly steamed it to get the crease out.
He's really a very good polish boy. With multiple functions.
Can we get a polish robot for Christmas?
No, BB-8 wouldn't like that.
There were a couple of things I picked up on. Mm-hmm. When we got to the end, she saved the day, etc. Mm-hmm. What did they call her?
Queen of
Planet Earth.
They got it a bit muddled.
Is that something to happen?
They got it muddled, but that's what they're saying.
Yeah, they got it muddled.
They think she is.
As it ends in a cliffhanger, the Doctor's trying to get her back home to Earth, which is May the 24th,
2025.
Penultimate episode.
But the TARDIS kept bouncing off something that was there.
New York all over again.
That's what we said. Why don't they just land on the 23rd?
Exactly.
And she could go to the cinema for the day.
Yeah, just avoid herself. It's not a problem.
But we had...
same in New York.
We had a floating London taxi, by the looks of it, in mid-space.
Eiffel Tower. Eiffel Tower.
Either the Blackpool Tower or the Eiffel Tower.
I think it was the Eiffel Tower.
A pyramid.
A pyramid and half the Empire State... Statue of Liberty.
Statue of Liberty, that was it, yeah. And a calendar.
And a very convenient calendar.
Either there was a cut that removed the element, or... How did Belinda know it was called the TARDIS?
See, that's what I wondered
as well. At no point during what we saw...
Did he say it's...
Because he said, they took my spaceship. The robots took my spaceship. They, he did say he took the TARDIS. So either A, they've cut something out.
They've cut a line or something.
Cut a line.
Possibly.
And that we haven't seen. Or there's something else in the remnants of her mind, in the recesses of her mind. Yeah. Because she said she didn't know that it was bigger on the inside.
No, that,
she
that
knew
was
it was the
good.
TARDIS because she said, "Is that your TARDIS?"
I hope if that were the case, they would have brought more attention to it. It's more likely that either it was cut or we're just meant to assume they spoke off screen.
Yeah, because we know they have had trouble editing in the past, Black Spot particularly.
Yeah, this one did feel a bit frenetic.
The
pacing of it was weird.
I did think it was a bit too fast. But just,
I loved it.
I put it down to my old.
Didn't want you to think about it too hard. Because once you did, it doesn't.
Well, no disrespect, but you don't think too hard about any Who's.
No, exactly. Never have since day one.
It was kind of like the pace of Rose.
Yes.
It didn't have the chase music, but it had the chase pace.
Yeah.
And I did like the fact that she had a go at him about taking her DNA,
without permission.
Yes.
And the fact that he apologised.
Yeah.
That was
I like
was
the fact
cool.
she's a feisty one, as they would say.
And she doesn't want to go on adventures. She wants to go home.
Tegan all over again.
Okay. But not quite so moany with it.
Not yet, anyway.
Talking of feisty, Shooty's acting towards the end of the episode got very excited, didn't he? Alan gets hoovered up as an embryonic.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that was wonderful. Polish.
And
dear.
And the doctor does sperm. And the doctor does a high kick.
He does. Yeah. Of course, she's not wearing a skirt. Kilt.
Is that cultural appropriation?
Sorry.
He is Scottish.
Lots that's of green screen in this episode. Oh, it looked pretty good to me.
Yeah, I didn't have any problems with it, unlike with some previous episodes. Yeah. I don't know how much it was on LED backdrops.
Yeah.
And how much was actually green screen. I don't know. But
I think it was a good one to start the questions it wasn't, shall
it's a
we
heck
say,
lot better than Space Beans.
Yeah, it wasn't a plot-heavy story, shall we say, and it's not going to intellectually challenge you, but it created all the right questions. Yeah. It introduced her and the fact that when she said, "I'm going to start on Monday," he suddenly remembered, "I've seen you before."
She was quite selfless in reactivating the polished robot to be tracked and deliberately caught.
That kind of thing, and the whole thing about how does she, if it isn't an edit cut, how does she know what the TARDIS is? And the fact she's an identical DNA. I think it was a good one for sort of like putting all those questions that are obviously the run-through theme that are going to pull together, the bouncing off the 24th of May.
As I think we discussed when we first watched it, it doesn't necessarily have to be a family thing, because amount of times that Kuno Reeves and Nicolas Cage have turned up on portraits from 18th century.
But I loved the fact that she was excited that she had this descendant.
If she really is, maybe it's actually her.
Exactly.
Gonna have to rewatch Boom now.
Yeah.
Not that we need an excuse. That was a good one.
So there's a planet only been called Miss Belinda Chandra for 10 years.
No, it was Miss Belinda Chandra 1. The star.
Yeah,
is Miss
true,
Belinda
yes,
Chandra.
Right.
But how do they know that she's purchased?
This whole thing is sort of
I think it's been known longer. I think Alan had only went back 10 years.
Yes.
But I got the impression that the star chart thing had gone back further.
That's what I thought. I'm sure they were talking 1,000 years or something.
No, Alan was only 10 years.
Yeah, but the star chart itself.
The star chart certificate had been gone. I got the impression that had gone back further.
That somehow managed to go back in time after
during that
session.
Wobbly thing. Lots of questions. I thought this was a fantastic sort of, the Doctor helps the goodies to defeat the baddies, amusing robots.
Mystery setup.
Exactly. I just really liked it.
And Alan didn't go to Margate, he went to Stargate.
didn't quite get that one.
No, I don't know why anybody would think.
No, just like Stargate. Everyone thought Ace had gone to, where is it?
Western Superman?
No.
I mean, it might be one of those things that he always said, if ever I'd like to move down Sussex, if I suddenly did, people might assume I have. It might be, and he said, I've wanted to go down to Margate.
Yeah, and he disappeared.
And she just assumed, he's moved off to Margate.
And towards the end, Alan was doing the ninth word thing as well, wasn't he? He was trying to drop
a
message. Yeah,
didn't he?
Yeah.
I'm not sure. This is where it's like perceptions of character. He didn't seem to be upset by what was going on or what had happened on the planet. And I don't know if that was genuine or, again, manipulation to play on her emotions to come to him. Yeah. Oh, well, come over, I need help. I got you now, that spider in the fly.
He kept saying he was in pain, didn't he?
Yeah.
Perhaps he genuinely was, because it did look horrific.
It did, yeah.
And,
he had no legs.
You know, you're in enough pain, you realise you've been a dick. Yeah. And you just want out of there, but he can't.
Another thing, that ninth word could have been directly linked into his subconscious rather than his conscious.
Perhaps.
But also, it could be him playing on it to do the spider thing.
But I thought this was a damn good start to the season.
Yeah.
Action-packed, at least, wasn't it?
Much better than Space Babies and Goblins.
Yeah. I like the fact those robots were a bit reminiscent of the emoji bots too.
Yeah.
The thing on their faces changed.
And especially also the shocked face.
Yeah. And the Michelin Web robots too. Yeah. They're a bit like those. And
Yeah, on the whole.
Yeah, it's okay. Although it remains to be seen just on how much it is involved in the overall plot of the entire season. And
I guess we'll find out.
Yeah.
Someone else really enjoyed it. We discussed it briefly over Facebook.
Oh, really?
He's sitting over there with... Are there two of them?
There's two of them.
There are now two.
One, two, three.
Hello, Head of Pertwee.
Hello, duplicate Dinky McSquirtsalot.
Dangerous Churchill, Nazi Spock. Terence!
Dave Zilla, the mighty!
Graham
Inky
Handles.
Inky McSquirtsalot.
Inky McSquirtsalot.
I have one...
You've got a
smaller
dinky as
than
well.
That one. I've got a dinky inky.
You've got a middle one.
And I've got a middle inky as well.
So you've got a
minky.
Minky and dinky.
I've got a minky and a minky. Dinky.
I'm thinking of Clouseau here.
Oh, dear.
And the goats. Don't forget the goats.
Oh, yeah.
And the goats. Have you named the goats?
Billy, Goat and Gruff.
Fair enough. Which takes us on to Lux. Now, this seems to have been a Marmite episode.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, apparently.
This, as Jean said, hashtag RIP Doctor Who. Whereas I thought this was freaking brilliant.
I thought it was really good.
I thought it was brilliant. Yeah,
it was absolutely wonderful.
Yeah.
And let's address the fourth wall breaking, which was shattered.
Which fourth wall breaking?
Well, one with the fans.
The television wall.
Yeah.
And that could have so easily been those of us who've been into it for a long time going, that's it. If you're going to make fun of us, then blah, blah, blah. But one line...
pulled it back.
If it wasn't for you, I wouldn't have met my two best friends.
Yeah. We all thought of the same.
Which I think could sum up everyone in this room.
Every single person in this room. If it wasn't for him, stroke her, I wouldn't have my family.
Yeah.
You know?
I wouldn't have my boyfriend. I wouldn't have met any of you.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
I thought that bit was nice because that plays on the whole fandom is a family thing.
Exactly.
That a lot of the actors say when they go... Well, I know we're jumping ahead here, but when I first saw that bit and they all jumped out, I thought, okay, where's this going? I mean, Love and Monsters had its good bit and bad bits, but it wasn't actually saying these are Doctor Who fans. These are Doctor Who fans. Yeah.
Yeah.
We got the Telos t-shirt. Telos are now.
The unit t-shirt.
Tom Sonic.
The scarf.
The look scarf, not the...
But anyway, we jump forward.
Anyway,
we jump forward.
1950s.
1952, Miami.
Yep. And Florida. The Doctor gets to introduce Belinda to the wardrobe. If anyone loved the wardrobe, it's this Doctor.
With some rock and roll.
Effect. It was pretty much a throwaway line where they've arrived at night and he's just said, I'm not sure daylight... We'd fit in daylight. And I love the kid in the diner because, of course, back then it was segregated. They shouldn't have been in the diner, or they weren't allowed in the diner.
Yeah. That is still within living memory.
Yes,
totally.
Yeah, there's people alive who dealt with that.
The little that want to bring it back.
Yeah, tell me that.
The little girl who was harassed and had things thrown at her because she wanted to go to school. Is only 70.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And at the moment, the grandparents who were among those crowds shouting at her don't want their grandchildren to learn about it.
Yeah.
I wonder why.
Yeah.
Anyway, so they go into this diner because there's a cinema.
Well, no. Doctor's bouncing off of...
Pitch House.
Wherever it was, 24th of May.
Oh, yes, yeah.
So he's built a device.
Yes, which looks like a guitar when folded up.
I did like the fact that we don't actually get to see much these days, is the Doctor in the guts of the TARDIS sorting something out.
Yeah, he had mechanic-type trolley. Yeah. Trolley.
And this little thing will make a connection with 24th of May.
Vortex indicator.
Yes.
Yep. And be able to reel them in.
Yay!
And so it all works, and we're going, but there's a padlock on that cinema. So it all kind of goes from there. Yeah. They do what they want to do, and he's found a mystery. Yeah. Velma has found a mystery.
She's Fred. So they go over to the diner to ask about the cinema, and it turns out that 15 people have gone missing, because what we saw before the trailer, before the titles, was these 15 people all sitting in the cinema watching their film with their popcorn. Watching the cartoon.
Which was very Betty Boo, bouncy.
It was, Fleischer, is it?
Yeah.
Mr. Ringerding.
Goes to town.
And he comes to life.
He climbs
out a la ring. And there's lots of screaming. Opening credits.
Don't make me laugh.
Yeah, good cold kept open. Saying, don't make me laugh.
Yeah.
So it's been 3 months.
Yes.
And they've... Since 15 people have gone missing. They've closed it up, but you can still hear the films playing.
Late at night.
Because the cinematographer's still in there.
Playing the films.
The cinematographer who's now become the old caretaker.
Yeah. And there's a lady in the diner who sits right next to the window where she can see the cinema.
The best view.
Because her son is one of the people in there. And we learn really quickly that she's a nice lady because she's approached by a black man to ask in a segregated diner to talk about her son.
And holds his hand
voluntarily and tells him everything. Mm. This is important.
Yeah. Yeah.
So in they go. Bit of sonicking into the cinema. Did you notice how at the end, though, the chains had repaired themselves?
Oh, there's more than one.
They went through the side door, not the front
enough.
Door.
Yeah. Okay.
I did think about that as well.
So they go into the cinema, and yet old man, what's his face?
Pie is
playing the films because he can't stop.
No, he's been told
he's feeding
to...
Lux.
He is.
Mr. Ringerding, rather. Yeah.
And has tap dancing ever sounded so creepy
and sinister?
Yeah. It always did, I thought.
And he's trying...
Lionel Blair.
Fred Astaire.
he tries to get them out.
Yeah.
Why he doesn't shout at them, just leave, I don't know.
Yeah, he's whispering from miles away.
He's whispering because he knows it's there and doesn't want to draw in attention to himself.
Yeah, it's like when you see something's about to happen, you know there's nothing you can do, so you... Oh, don't.
So you kind of work out that he isn't a good guy as in self-sacrificing good guy, but he's a good guy.
He's just a guy.
He's trying to survive. No malicious intent.
That's
there.
It. Maliciously.
Some of his scenes were so sad.
Oh, yeah.
Because he'd been married for, 30 years?
Yeah.
And his wife has died.
Basically
and
got
this,
killed in a road accident.
This Lux brings her back. Brings or an image of her back.
And, yeah, initially I thought it was an image, but...
By the end.
Evidence, there's something more there.
Yeah, she was definitely there, or he thought she was there.
Or perhaps he had instilled of what he thought was her
into that image. Yeah, and it was so terribly sad. Because would you want to leave if the love of your life has gone and you can stay with them? You just wouldn't want to leave, would you?
You can be with a semblance of them.
Yeah.
Because they're kind of immortalised with film, aren't they?
Yeah. They are.
So Mr. Ringerding jumps out.
Played by...
Voiced by our dear friend Mr. Cumming.
Yeah. Alan Cumming. Former King James the VI.
Yes.
And don't make me laugh. Why wouldn't we want to make you laugh?
Everybody else do the same thing we did when you laughed?
Oh, yeah. It was really good.
Oh, shit.
Although, presumably, that's got to have predated Lux becoming that character, because that was Ringerding's catchphrase.
Yeah. But that's the whole thing, though, because why it was so familiar to everyone, it's been there forever.
Yeah.
It doesn't predate him. He's so far in the... The past is still way in its creation's future.
Don't know, yes.
Although we saw it in the TV, you get the feeling that it's just been there for so long.
Mm. Yeah, it's not very clear. It doesn't have to be that what happened that made Lux become this particular character.
It's something
about a teaspoon. I don't know why that comes into it.
This is where Lux, the name Lux, comes into play.
Yeah, light.
Right.
Lux is light. It's a measure of light. So yes. A unit of light on the optic lens is one Lux.
And it was the reflection.
And it was the moon. And one of the places Lux comes from is moonlight. I think I might be wrong, but I think there's some old gods named Lux after the moon. So the moonlight hit the spoon, which then refracted off something else, imparted into the image, and it basically imparted light into the cartoon
character. Also, it's the fact that it's a billion to one chance of bouncing off the spoon, bouncing off the drawing pin,
yeah,
and going through.
It was very Xena throwing her shadow.
Yeah. It was, yeah, very much. Yeah. But yeah, the reason with it coming from the moon is, well, moonlight turns you mad. It's all that magical.
It's his neck. The moon is an egg.
Yeah, all that magical stuff mixed up with the moon.
It's made of cheese and it's an egg.
We also had the absolutely wonderful animated sequence.
Oh,
and
yes.
Did you notice the voices?
Yeah.
They were talking like they were in Scooby-Doo.
They were, yes.
It was. There was a definite inflection in the voice there.
It was wonderful.
I'm only two-dimensional.
And this waste is unachievable.
I only have a two-dimensional brain.
And then when they get sad and start talking about serious stuff, they get more depth.
Yeah, more dimension.
And then we had the scene. Obviously, they jump out of the screen into the Doctor Who fans.
Very well done. It looks like they're coming out of your screen.
Yeah, yeah, the way the glass.
They push the glass.
Yeah.
And I have to say, I do like, so what's your favourite episode? Blink.
Blink. Blink. Yeah. Yeah. What about the one where I'm standing on a landmine?
Blink.
Blink. So also a Blink? Stephen Moffat episode.
Yes.
None of them are RTD episodes.
Yeah. What happens in Blink? Well,
you can't blink for 45 minutes.
Sounds like an epic.
Yeah. But I'm friends with Toby Haydock on Facebook.
Oh,
and
yes,
the woman with the Meep t-shirts, mm-hmm, is a friend of his.
Yeah.
And they'd met loads of times and she didn't tell him a thing.
She never mentioned it.
She didn't break it. Yeah.
Sign to secrecy.
Yeah. But initially it's played that the Doctor and the Companion are a work of fiction, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So initially those are real fans because this is the TV show.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it's when they work out, well, one of them takes longer than the others.
Yeah.
Work out.
Admit.
What will happen to them.
Again, shades of Donna and the children.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think that's why they survived at the end, because they had started to work out. They felt sad.
They had more depth.
Yeah. Although they didn't have a backstory and didn't have a last name. So they're there just characters to move the story along. They started to create depth to their own characters.
So they survived. Maybe.
Or are they the gods of Ragnarok?
I'm not sure the gods of Ragnarok would wear a Meep t-shirt.
I don't know.
Maybe on Wednesdays.
Yeah.
So eventually they get out of there. The Doctor has to heal his hand because he's burnt. And Meep realises... Oh, sorry, Meep.
Lux.
Lux realises this man got light.
Yeah.
He got lots of light.
Can give him substance.
And so we have another example of the... Yes, but you're 60% water and you can still drown. They give him all the light they need because of Mr. Pye.
Yeah, that actually worked for me because it's been...
Agreed, totally.
Yeah, Lux has been dispersed so far that he no longer has coherence.
The only bit that didn't work for me was the setting fire lots of celluloids does not go boom and does not go boom big enough
to
knock
through
two walls.
The oxygen canisters that were there as well. Tons of them all along
had
the wall.
Because it blew through at least two or three solid brick walls.
I had no problem with how quickly they caught because that stuff catches.
Oh, God,
As was pointed out, if it stopped moving in the reel, it would catch fire.
Yeah.
Gremlins
2 did that.
It doesn't tend to explode.
Yeah, there were loads of oxygen canisters. That's where they kept them. The ambulance station was sort of out of commission.
It's really weird. The whole thing. Yeah, turn into a cartoon character. No, but
the boom.
The celluloid doesn't really.
But the boom did it for you.
The NBS reminded of Roger Rabbit. Ward knocked down, you see Toontown.
Two bits.
Here we got the outside world.
Yeah. And then, of course, all the others escape from the celluloid.
Yeah.
And everyone's reunited. And then Mrs. Flood is there again, dressed a bit like Jackie O.
Yeah, in pink, a pink business suit.
I thought she was in a Sarah Jane Smith outfit, but I couldn't identify where it's
it
from.
Could have been, you could push it and say it's the one from the beginning of Five Doctors.
Yeah, I looked at the picture of Five Doctors and it's very different. The
it's
collar
a different
is
pink. And,
yeah, the collar's very different.
I do like the cosplay theory. I hadn't thought of that. That is quite
she's
good.
Cosplaying
Mrs. Flood
all the
cosplaying.
Going back a bit.
She shows up dressed as a police officer.
Going backwards just to, because we made a point of it, is when the mother and the cop turned up in the cinema.
Oh, yes.
Whilst they're chapped in the film, at one point they stop the film and they think they've actually got out into the cinema.
And the Doctor and Belinda are there, and suddenly there's the woman from the diner is there with the police officer. And I knew straight away that something was wrong because she'd gone from being a sweet, grieving mother to a racist git. And a grass. Yeah.
As it was said, the characterisation, which the Doctor mentioned.
Yeah. And also, you know, please, that's a New York Police Department outfit. We're in Miami.
But I couldn't quite figure out why the hashtag R... I mean, not on the internet, in the programme, the hashtag RIP Doctor... Is this making fun of all the people... Yeah. That keep going hashtag Doctor's dying.
Well, yeah, the ones who really shouldn't be tuning in if they hate it that much.
We've had Doctor Who is dying for the past 15 years.
Oh my God, we had when Peter Davison was cast, it was going to kill the show.
Yeah, okay.
but that's what that is. It's a piss takeover.
Because that was sort of like us sitting there thinking, okay, you are taking the mickey, aren't you? All the internet memes.
Well, he always has. Remember in the first run with the Ming-Mongs.
Yeah. RTD has no time for what he calls keyboard warriors. Warriors.
Now, obviously, Mrs. Flood turns up at the end and does the whole thought, sort of like, watch this show. One time only ends on the 24th.
Yeah.
Is she a time traveller as well? Because, okay,
must be.
We've got a living next door to Ruby and we've got a living next door to Belinda. They're all...
And now she's in 1952.
Now she's in 1952 with them.
She's everywhere.
Wherever. Is she linked to the TARDIS, maybe?
So
maybe.
Is she another Mrs...
she another Sutek?
Yeah. Is she another Susan another Twist? Is it, linked to
she...
Tutis?
Part of the gods pantheon.
Oh, that's good.
Mm-hmm. Which...
we haven't even mentioned what the why don't please don't make me laugh.
No.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Oh yes, the giggle.
Yeah. Oh, sorry, Trixie.
Okay, Trixie the dog does not like the giggle.
Lux is part of the pantheon, which is mentioned as the toy maker. Sutek.
What's one of that? Maestro.
Maestro. Maestro, that was it, yeah.
What about Fenric?
No.
Wasn't mentioned as such.
Not yet.
Different pantheon.
Oh, okay.
Fenric is Norse. These lots so far aren't Norse. We've had an Egyptian.
Yeah, exactly.
And Fenric, kind of a different energy. Okay, Fenric's like, destroy the world.
It would be kind of awesome if she is Fenric.
Why not? Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I'd be interested to see who she is, because up until now, she hasn't travelled through time.
No, this is the first time
she's... appeared outside of that set time period we've seen of it.
24, 25.
So are we to assume she lives near Millie, but lived next door to Belinda?
Well, the first time we saw her, she was living next door to... Ruby.
Ruby, sorry.
Yeah, she was living next door to Ruby. Then when we had the beginning of this one, she was seen to be living next door to
Belinda.
Now, whether she has moved or she's living contemporously is another matter.
And then she turned up at the end of this one in another time zone.
Yes, this is the first time we've seen her outside the time zone.
Deeper and deeper. Woohoo!
I enjoyed this one more than I enjoyed the first one. The first one was one of the better ones of the first starters and all this of it, but I did enjoy this one more. I watched it once to watch it, and then I watched it once to make notes.
Yeah, I watched it again this morning to make notes.
I enjoyed it both times. The fact that I questioned that celluloid blew a hole in
it. That's the only thing that paid you off.
And all the other stuff that happened.
That's because it's within the influence of Lux, you see. So it magnified the exposed ability. Having said that, I did like the ghastly looking organic Lux.
Oh, yeah. When he'd grown out of his cartoon.
Yeah, into an actual body.
Yeah, that's quite
horrible.
Yeah, quite horrific.
Well, one thing I liked about this one was the pacing.
Yeah, much better.
Sometimes with New Who, being usually with the one-parter, it seems to be, all rush, slow down. Or it's, we've got 40 minutes to tell the plot and then we'll spend 10 minutes saying goodbye to everyone. Mm. And the pacing sometimes seems to be a bit stop and start, or bits of the story get compressed in other... Yeah. This one, it was kind of like almost maintained its pace all the way through. It didn't hurry through anything, and it didn't slow down. The slowest part was the bit with the fans, effectively. Yeah. That was the interlude break before we went into Act 3.
But there was, as we said, there were some genuinely beautiful bits in this.
Yeah.
The bit where Mr. Pye is dancing with his lady.
Oh, yeah. That was lovely.
And she hands him the matches.
Yeah.
Only RTD... could have written the bit with the fans because he understands exactly what it means to us all.
Yeah.
Because he was one.
Exactly.
In the Fitzroy Tavern himself many
years. We may not be sitting there wearing a scarf and T-shirts and whatever, but...
I've got my big T-shirt
on now.
I did really enjoy the pace of this one. I felt like I wasn't watching... a snapshot of just the end of something.
Yeah, you wanted starting at episode 3.
Yeah, I had a start, a beginning, a middle and an end, and it all flowed nicely together. There wasn't a really quick beginning, fast pace through the middle, and then like a long goodbye.
Yeah, because it's a nice change from the Robot Revolution, because you kind of feel you've missed a lot, don't you, where it's jumping around in time.
And I mean, even with Dot and Bubble, love Dot and Bubble, and I have no problem when we jump into something, but we jumped into it, and we just dealt with that moment in time when they're society. But this one, we saw the beginning. We saw them go into the cinema and disappear and him come to life. So like the whole encapsulation of it.
The one with Charles Dickens.
Mm.
You see him
Unquiet Dead.
Unquiet Dead, thank you. All at the theatre. Yeah. And we go from there.
That's it. You don't need to for every story. And I do like when you just come in the middle of something. Mm. Because you don't need to necessarily. But it was just nice the way they did this one.
Also, it gave a bit more time for the characters, I think. Yeah. There weren't too many characters.
Yeah. The woman at the diner.
Exactly. And there was a really nice moment there about the police box bringing hope.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Callback almost to 50th anniversary.
Yeah. Yeah, that noise brings hope wherever you go.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, it's really nice.
Watching Unleashed afterwards, Miami was filmed on a stormy night in Wales.
Really rough.
It was one of the worst storms of 24.
I rewatched it this morning, having seen that already, and I thought you couldn't tell.
Yeah,
there was just a couple of points where people's clothes ruffled.
Yes,
but you get breezes in Miami.
Yeah, they did a really good job with the colour grade to make that
bright and sunny.
And when we watched it the second time, having watched Unleashed, I particularly waited for the sound effect of the kid when he bit his popcorn.
Oh, right. Mm-hmm. I don't understand. They didn't explain in Unleashed why they don't just record that stuff on set.
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't pick up well enough for the soundtrack.
It doesn't sound right.
You've got the microphones attuned for the voices, but that's a much quieter sound, so you might not pick up
just
on
pick,
it.
Pull it up in the
edit. Then it starts to sound
warm. The thing
warmed.
Is, though... what it sounds like in your head isn't how it sounds outside. So, like, when you bite a crisp, it sounds really crispy and that in your head. But to someone listening, it doesn't sound the same way.
Yeah.
So we've got used to what the sound sounds like in our head, not necessarily what the sound sounds like externally. But so they have to enhance sometimes things to make it sound like we think it will sound.
Since watching Big Finish Live, I've developed a new love of Foley artists.
I haven't watched any of the Unleashed on this one yet, so I've got to watch them.
Also to do with the noise is that the music. There are two bits of music were taken from The Big Bang.
Yeah, I thought I recognised.
Season 5 finale, Matt Smith.
Yeah.
Sad Man in the Box, and I can't remember what the other piece is called. Yeah. But why from that particular episode of Matt Smith era? Recognisable bits of music, too. Yeah.
Well, to us, they're very recognisable. To children watching this, they're not.
Yeah, but he would know that the fans would pick up on that. So is that a thing they're doing deliberately?
Maybe.
Could be a deliberate choice.
Oh, crying out loud, we had the Wrath of Khan music was the same music as
Aliens.
I think sometimes there is two layers to some of his Who episodes, and some of them are the straightforward, this bit's for the kids, they won't recognise this bit, this bit's for the kids, this is the fun, the bit, the games, and then he puts in the bits that are the top notes that the fans will get going through, yeah, like the bits of music, the little clues I'm going to sprinkle here, or the little red herrings I'm going to sprinkle here.
Are you saying it might be distracting to get a little image of Russell T on the screen winking at you?
Yeah. It just seemed particularly odd. I think the first bit was actually a bit of Amy's theme.
Yeah.
Playing over Belinda.
Yeah.
She's presumably got her own theme.
I was going to say, perhaps Murray hasn't come up with a theme for her yet.
Yeah. So, I don't know. And given we've got Flood cosplaying companions, is this a misdirected red herring?
Could be. It could be.
Parthenon. Parthenon is more than one, but doesn't actually say it. So how many other gods do we think are out there? What other gods?
You mean Pantheon?
Pantheon, sorry.
Parthenon's a building. Parthenon's
a building. Yes. So this how many other gods are we going to see in this Pantheon?
Well, at least 50. It's going to Centauri.
It's Russell's own concoction. So in mythology, you don't have a god of games. You have a trickster god, but you don't have a god of games. We don't have a god of music.
Yeah. See, so, I still think they're in the toy maker's realm. I don't think they've left the toy maker's realm.
Right, I think that's that's very likely, given what happens.
Although the toy maker lost, and in theory they should have been able to leave and go back into the normal universe where gravity is gravity, not mavity, sort of style. I think that somehow he has still managed to trap them in that. Well, I still think he's still playing the toy maker's games.
But in New Who, they'd never been in the toy maker's realm, have they? The toy maker came to our realm. Yeah.
Or perhaps they are just in
allegedly the toy maker came into our realm, but we still have the unconditional regeneration of 13 into 14.
Yeah, the unusual, the binary.
The clothes. Now, Russell T said he didn't want David Tennant cross-dressing.
That was a pretty androgynous outfit, frankly.
Yeah, exactly.
And like David Tennant hasn't cross-dressed once or twice in his life.
So if you're asking...
Only on the weekend.
If you're asking how the hell did they get into there, that is a possible point.
Entry point.
Mm. Wasn't there another one with the line of salt in the episode before Giggle?
That was Wild Blue Yonder. That's another.
That's apparently how they got let in.
That is possibly how the toy maker was attracted into our world.
Yeah.
But if you're looking for somewhere to say that they're in the toy maker's realm, that is a possible entry point.
I just have a feeling it feels like the realm of Doctor Who, but it feels slightly off.
I think the original Toymaker story with Hartnell, though, that was in the realm of the
Toymaker's realm. Yeah.
So unless we're saying he never left there, then at that point, that's so early on.
I seem to have been blowing it up.
I think this is going to be an interesting series.
Very much so.
Because the other thing I like about it is these characters, unlike bloody Amy's baby, it's not coming up at the end of every episode. The characters that are making this flow through are actually driving the episodes they're in.
Mm.
They're not incidental.
Apart from Flood.
She's a man. She's the bad wolf.
At the moment, we don't know. She's the Susan Swift.
Yes. She's the RTD meme.
Yeah.
This has been the best start to a season for quite a while.
Mm.
I really enjoyed them both.
Perhaps.
We just want to know how Earth gets destroyed at the end.
Or is it? Or what's happening there?
Or how the taxi, the Statue of Liberty, end up the pyramid, floating. All suddenly float away.
Yeah.
Perhaps this is where Mavity changes into gravity again.
Yeah,
and there's this moment where it's all gone.
It's the last episode will be set on an amusement planet, and it's like Lego World. Yeah. You know, that's the small Lego buildings.
Yeah.
It's all the fault of Miss Queen Belinda Chandra, Queen of Earth.
Queen of Earth, yeah.
We have to assume that...
I was going to say, I still think that Queen of Earth isn't quite...
It's going to come back and bite us.
I think that's going to come back and bite us somewhere. Rather than being them misinterpreting something.
I think not, but we'll see.
We have to assume all the floaty space stuff was happening behind the TARDIS because they were looking out.
Yeah.
And they literally took off again.
That's the Eiffel Tower.
There's a big hole where the Earth used to be.
Yeah.
I still say it's the Blackpool Tower.
Could be.
Okay, so we clearly have loved the start of this season.
Mm-hmm.
We've been very impressed with it. We have happy faces.
Yeah.
Even Trixie, well, Trixie's asleep, but she has a happy face. But we want to know.
She did look a bit alarmed when we all went.
She did, but I was a bit alarmed myself. But we would like to know what you lot think of the Robot Revolution and Lux. Write to us via show
at
staggeringstories.net. Woohoo! You can even write and let us know what you think of the next episodes.
You could do.
Yes. No doubt we'll cover the next two on the next podcast.
And now, with his view on everything,
and everyone.
This was before you all ignored us and turned us off and he disappeared, it's over to Crumbly's Corner.
Crumbly's Corner!
You made the dog jump. Sorry, Trix.
Hello, Crumbly here.
Crumbly.
Sorry I'm not at tonight's podcast, but I'm currently on my Easter break in Hampshire with Ooh. Fake Crumbly. Say hello, dear.
Hello, dear.
Hello.
They exist.
But I would like to share my thoughts and opinions on what's just been discussed here tonight.
Oh, yeah. Ooh.
The robot revolution kicks off Shuti Gatwa's second season as the Doctor. Mm. All is not well on a planet far, far away, as robots are overlording it over their former human friends. And, to boot, a bewildered human Earth nurse is captured by the robots and then taken to their home planet to be their queen. As she is going to be their queen, the planet is called Belinda Chandra 1. The Doctor, however, arrived on the planet 6 months beforehand and has assumed the role of planetary historian in an attempt to restore balance. All manner of hijinks ensue and the Doctor is able to rescue Belinda to take her home back to Earth on the 25th of May 2025. However, dun, dun, dun. That date is barred to the TARDIS by yet-to-be-revealed forces and events.
We the angels.
The first episode is a colourful romp through space and time. The robot antagonists are sort of large and show typical robot behaviour, clanking around waving their blasters at all and sundry. I thought the cat getting blasted was a tad unnecessary, though. Even though the robots were great lumbering hulks, they had the same emoji-style faces as the Vardis from the episode Smile, and the droid that went round hoovering up wasn't a far cry from the overzealous cleaning droid from the film Wall-E.
Okay.
All in all, a fun scatters. Episode that does yes. raise one major question. What has happened to the 25th of May 2025?
Delete.
On to the second episode, Lux. This episode sees the Doctor and Belinda in more familiar surroundings of 1950s Miami, and sinister goings-on in a disused cinema, and the introduction of a brand new villain. From the first eye, I knew that Mr. Ring-a-Ding to be a bit of a wrong'un. You first see him in a cartoon asking the little girl what her name was and where she's going. It's only when he steps out of the cartoon and into the real world that we find out he is one of the pantheon of chaos gods, featuring the likes of the Celestial Toymaker, the Maestro, and Sutek. And comes out with the same series of rising and falling notes that was featured in The Giggle. One brief scene I liked was some of the lettering on the outside of the cinema being shown to fall off to reveal the word Harbinger. The scenes where the Doctor and Belinda are turned into cartoon characters and have to escape their rather novel confinement was very cleverly done. The following scenes where the Doctor and Belinda meet three, very diehard Doctor Who fans, I felt was unnecessary, and I found the lampooning of them somewhat harsh.
Ooh.
Watch out for the finale of the episode, and spoiler music, sha-la-la-la-la, etc. The reappearance of Mrs. Flood, a.k.a. Andrew Watts, a.k.a. Mrs. Brian May. I have the feeling this does not bode well for the Doctor. And finally, on a parting note, I would like to give a 30-second recommendation. Everyone is familiar with Thunderbirds and Captain Scarlet, but the series I have rediscovered is UFO. Set in 1980, it covers the covert operations of Shadow, an organisation which was set up to counter alien incursions on Earth, where people are killed and their internal organs harvested. It features a lot of Gerry Anderson alumni, including Ed Bishop, who voiced Captain Blue, and Shane Rimmer, who voiced Scott Tracy, and quite a few familiar faces from 1960s and 1970s British TV and film. If you strip away the rather dubious futuristic fashions, the occasional casual sexism, and the rather groovy soundtrack, you have something that is a lot darker and a lot grittier than any of Gerry Anderson's previous offerings. Anyway, that's enough of my ramblings for tonight. I'll be back in the studio soon, so until then, this is the Crumbly saying, be seeing you.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Crumbly. Bye, fake Crumbly. Ooh, so he was cross about the fans.
Which I'll have to discuss the redeeming feature with him.
Yes. I think we're going to have to let the dog pee on his seat.
Okay, Scott's sitting there at the moment.
Oh, yes, sorry.
I'm very absorbent.
While I remember...
Yes.
Now, there's been a lot of play on words, like the film words falling down and forming Harbinger.
Mm.
I have another theory.
All right.
Belinda's actress, Virada Sethu, her first name is a clear contraction of Vashta Narada.
Ah.
Mm.
Are you saying he's casting actors and actresses not on their acting ability, but on the fact that their names can be used for the show?
Susan Twist.
I have been trying to work out if Mrs. Flood's an anagram, even if you take it as deluge and all the rest of it.
Something to do with River Song or Amy Pond?
Well, a lot of them are going it's River or Amy because of Flood and River, but I think... I think that's a red herring.
I'm sorry, have you seen Belinda cast a shadow yet?
No.
No, you haven't. Vashta Narada.
I haven't been looking.
Look, in the next episode, she will not cast a shadow.
Well, the next episode takes place at night, I think.
Exactly.
Get very harsh shadows at night.
Oh, dear.
I told you, which I did think of Sapphire and Steel a bit, particularly with the 15 people at the cinema.
Oh, yes, the photo.
Yeah. I'm halfway through that story, actually. I've been doing the classic Sapphire and Steel.
Photographs.
Yeah.
We're going to have to get your 30-second recommendation. What do you think of Sapphire and Steel?
Yeah. Oh, it's very good. It's very good. What's this? The fourth story. I particularly like the second one at the railway station.
Oh.
Yes. Particularly since they decide to sacrifice the main character.
Yeah. They do. Pretty brutal.
To put the ghost to rest.
Spoiler music,
it's a bit of a while. The third story was meant to be a bit futuristic, and it was basically still getting attacked by a pillow.
Yeah.
I'd say that's the weakest.
I think it is overall the weakest.
It was a bit weird, it was uncomfortable, and
every now and then, especially before the pandemic, when I had to go down to the coast for work stuff, I would come back, and you always had to change at Ford Station, which is the middle of nowhere, and it was always like 11 o'clock at night.
No one there.
Those lights that only come on when motion sensitive. Like the freaking squirrel that did on the other platform. There was no one there and the light came on. Jesus. But when someone walks past the station whistling, you have Sapphire and Steel anguish moments.
Absolutely. And in this particular story, the railway station, you also have the Vashta Narada type shadows closing in and everything. Yeah.
Coincidence? I think not. We have some feedback.
Whoa!
We've heard from Jay.
Oh, hello, Jay!
Hot off the presses, Jay.
Jay says, hello.
Hello.
Now, last time I wrote, someone commented that I was being a little short in my greetings towards the various inanimate objects around Adam's front room. Well, let me try and correct that now.
It's just going to end well done.
Howdy hi to Terence, Dave Zilla, the mighty, Inky and Dinky, McSquirt's a lot, Dangerous Church, or Nazi Spot, the Moomin that peers out from over Real Keith's shoulder, folded up and propped against a radiator, Clara, various nebulas and knob-knackers, and, of course, the head of Pertwee. Yay! Oh, yes, and all the rest of you speaking types, too.
Hello.
I can't really comment about anything you said in episode 469 yet, because as of writing this so far, I haven't got around to listening to it yet. Nor have I listened to The Whispering Forest or seen Mickey 17 yet.
Oh,
so how about some commentary on the first two episodes of season 41 of Doctor Who instead? Season 2 in new money. First off, the elephant in the room. This is the first season for a very long time that we have no idea when or even if we'll see another season after this one.
Yes.
We even know that there won't be a Christmas special this year, so already that's a pretty weird feeling right from the get-go. Now, the episode, starting with the robot revolution. On the surface, it didn't seem too bad immediately after watching, although certain things niggled me straight away. The longer I had to think about the episode, more things troubled me about it. During the episode itself, the very first thing that stuck out was the power cut that the Doctor caused in the hospital. This was more than just an oops, my bad gag, as I immediately wondered what that would do to all the patients who might be on vital life-saving and supporting equipment.
Yeah.
We didn't even see any backup generator kick in. That's really far from an oops. Why mess with the sonic anyway here? Surely he could have got out the psychic paper and got the information he needed that way.
Yeah.
I'm starting to think that this Doctor may be far more accident prone than his predecessors. After all, he accidentally stepped on a mine and also broke a fairy circle.
Yeah, you're right.
Were we supposed to care about the people we met on the Miss Belinda Chandra planet? They barely got anything close to even passing character development there. Sasha 55 was someone the Doctor had known for 6 months. But other than a few lines, she was gone too soon to even make the Doctor's tear, which we now know from a recent RTD interview is all Chuties doing rather than being scripted, even feel believable. About the only other person I remember from the Planet People is the obstinate muscle guy, Pex, who was quick to blame Belinda for everything.
Yeah.
Belinda herself getting all uppity at the Doctor when he scans her DNA without permission at the end also didn't sit right afterwards, as she threw the whole of the little rebel group under the bus by reactivating that stupid little polish robot. I swear that if my robot vacuum went around saying that all the time, I'd hurl it out of the window.
I want mine to go and say punish. Yeah.
The entire purpose of that robot seemed to be to lead the big robots to the rebels and to vacuum up the egg and sperm that Alan was averse back to. The fact that the Doctor seemed positively gleeful when that happened made me wonder if this was still the Doctor, because that's such an un-Doctor thing to do. And at the end of the episode, we have yet another case of it being destiny that the Doctor and Belinda have met, with the illusion of their timelines being connected somehow. I'm getting deja vu here again.
Yep.
On to Lux, which is yet another offering of the Pantheon gods. While I liked this more than the Devil's Cord, I am still extremely on the fence about the whole of this Pantheon storyline. Certainly the idea of having a living cartoon character face off against the Doctor is an interesting idea, and is both fairly well executed in terms of the animation, as well as the voicing by Alan Cumming, returning to the show again from being King James in The Witchfinders. Mm-hmm. Yet I remain confused as to the motivation behind the character. With Maestro, it was pretty cut and dry. They wanted to take control of all the music in the world, and was pretty obviously villainous. For Mr. Ringerding / Lux, it seemed that their purpose was to absorb as much light as possible, which is what ultimately happened, of course, giving us a confusing ending of being defeated by giving them exactly what they wanted and making them infinite. I guess what Lux did to the moviegoers who were trapped in the film was some kind of hostage thing to get projectionist Reginald Pye to keep playing movies to feed them, but then was nice to the guy by giving him his wife back. So I suppose not as evil as Maestro, but manipulative. I felt that they maybe could have done more with the animated Doctor and Belinda, but even a Disney-assisted budget could only stretch so far.
Yeah.
My biggest niggle about this episode was when it got too meta with the Doctor and Belinda climbing out of a TV to a room with fans of the show. Yeah. While this was no doubt RTD having a good poke at fans, it doesn't really sit well with me that this series is increasingly going out of its way to say that the Doctor is part of a narrative that people somewhere are watching, which also ties into Mrs. Flood's surprise appearance towards the close of the episode. While not technically a fourth wall break, it really does feel that we have a trend where she's both a character as well as something of a narrator, and that makes me think that she is quite likely to be another member of the Pantheon. Yeah. Side note to the meta scene, Belinda's unimpressed comment about Blink being a story where you're not allowed to blink, where that sounds like an absolute epic, was most certainly the standout moment here. Anyway, I'm still turning this episode over in my head, so I'll just finish with it by saying the Doctor has regeneration / bi-generation energy left this far into his regeneration is quite surprising, and it felt that RTD was struggling for an idea here. I think that'll do for this moment. Titty boo, Jay.
Thank you, Jay.
I'll come back on some of that from Jay.
Likewise.
I'll say, I don't think Lux was actually a villain. I think Mr. Ringerding came into life and he just wanted to live. That was what's happened, is that the Lux energy has created this character into life off of the celluloid screen, and all he wants to do is live. He's not good, he's not bad. He just wants to be. He wants to absorb life, he wants to live.
He was utilising the energy for the Doctor to create himself a physical body to go outside.
Yes.
And Jay's right about it, you know, being a bit too long after the regeneration, maybe to get away with that regeneration energy. Because in the Capaldi second season with Davros just stole the regeneration energy.
We also had 11 giving up a little bit of energy.
Yeah, to River.
Oh, to River. Yeah.
To repair her hand.
So it's
something that it's not new to this episode of this series. It's happened before.
Yeah,
it's been established.
Maybe he just wanted to remind everyone that the Doctor had this energy. So he burnt his hand and fixed it.
And it's not the first time we've had a villain take his regeneration energy.
Yeah.
Never seemed to get it back.
No,
but maybe it doesn't matter because he seems to have unlimited regeneration. Now we have the
timeless child. Yeah. It doesn't necessarily as important to him as it is, say, to maybe another Time Lord.
Yeah.
Also, wasn't Lux tied to the film he was in, because at one point the song came on.
He had to do the song.
That let them get away because he had to sing the whole song.
Yeah,
had to,
until he had physical form, he wasn't separated. He had to stay in that.
He had to stay in the theatre. He had boundaries, and that's why he tried to utilise the regenerative energy to have a physical and, as I think we mentioned before, quite ghastly looking body.
I don't think he was evil per se. I think he just...
A means to an end.
He accidentally came to life.
Yeah.
Well, certainly the least evil of the ones we've seen so far.
Yeah.
Even though he wanted the light of the atomic bomb.
He did.
But he may not have understood what it was.
Yeah.
He understood the light.
Maybe.
Yes.
Who knows?
Small sum.
Thank you, Jay.
Thank you, yeah.
Thank you.
And so that brings us to the end of another podcast.
Aww.
But fear not, next time there'll be more of the same, more news and reviews, more who old and new, more fun, frivolity and jollity.
This is the end.
Possibly more crumbly.
Or hopefully more crumbly.
Probably not. It's going to be another bank holiday weekend, isn't it?
Oh, boy.
Is it?
May bank holiday. Oh, good grief. That's excellent.
That's not excellent for the fact we won't have crumbly.
Well, no, apart from that. Anyway, so until that...
L
for...
Lux.
Long-legged, lanky, lusty...
Lugubrious. Loose-lipped.
Long-haired, loose-lipped, lemon-loving lizard...
Ludicrous.
Lizard-sucking woman called Linda, who lives in the woods.
Comes lollygagging,
lolloping towards us.
We intend no copyright infringement of any lyrics.
This is me, Fake Heath, saying farewell.
Goodbye.
Au revoir.
Goodbye.
Listen, just erotic, nothing kinky. It's the difference between using a feather and using a chicken.
What?
Yeah, okay.
You have been listening to the Staggering Stories podcast, Series 1, number 470, featuring Adam Purcell, Fake Keith, Gene Riddler, Scott Fuller, and the real Keith Dunn. Views expressed here are those of the speakers and don't necessarily represent those of the other speakers or the site. No copyright infringement is intended, and this has been an El Presidente production for www.staggeringstories.net.
Such language.
I know. God, woman.
Fine.
Oh, God, I've got the burps.
It wasn't even a McDonald's this time.
Oh, it was an orange twirl.
Uh-oh.
I've lost it. There it is.
You lost it a long time ago. Another Doctor Who connection was her submitting to John Pertwee's carnal needs, being married to the Third Doctor. The Third Doctor actor.
What?
Shall I read that one again?
Why is the head staring at us like that?
Yeah.
For a moment there, I just forgot what we were doing.
Robot Revolution.
Well, I was going to
Dear
be
heart.
More...
Are we doing both of them?
Yeah.
Do one and then do the other.
You mean do them in order?
Okay.
Yeah.
God, really?
No, do them backwards.
For us, sometimes that is unusual.
You're right. You're dying.
You should hang on. She was going redder and redder. It's been funny.
A little bit went down the wrong hole. Okay.
She was doing the robot expression.
Sticky things in the wrong hole again.
I've warned her against drinking whilst upside down.
Oh, that's better.
Oh, the one I sent you.
I want one.
They're good, aren't they?
Oh, the dragon scooters.
Yeah, it's mobile mobility scooters, but they're dragons.
It's got dragon's Amazing. Head and wings at the back. Yeah. You can wear as a witch if you want to.
Yeah,
yes.
They took Enola Gay out because it's got the word gay in it.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. There's some societies mainly made up of librarians that are in America that are desperately downloading as much information they can before it gets erased off of the national servers.
You know...
This is really 1984.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know Minecraft?
Yeah.
The Minecraft is online.
Mm-hmm.
Certain people on Minecraft... have built a library to store banned books.
Yeah.
Did you see the Tennessee thing?
Yeah.
It was about 12 cars from ICE showed up to grab this guy and his daughter, and he'd locked himself into his van with his daughter, and the neighbours formed a human chain surrounding the van and wouldn't let ice through. Basically were delivering him food and drinks and blankets to keep him. And I hope this is happening everywhere. Shall we lead out?
After that, yes.
Bit of written feedback.
Oh!
Who wants to read it?
I'll read it.
Okay.
I won't, because I'm terrible at reading today.
It's amusing.
After me, curmudgeonly.
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 I'm going to use that word in everyday phrases at home now. And everyone's just going to double take.
People look at you.
Pompous skit.
Are you all right?
Yeah.
Curmudgeonly, sir. Curmudgeonly.
Curmudgeonly, sir.
Between using a feather and using a chicken.
What? Okay. Terry Pratchett?
Yeah.
Terry Pratchett.
He had a certain way of life.
670? 470?
470.
You have been listening to the Staggering Stories podcast, series number 1.
Have we?
Tuesday. Yeah. On Tuesday.
You have been listening to the Staggering Stories podcast, series number... Oh, for sake!
Well, if you insist...
We're still here.
Wow, we're still here.
I think I'm fading.
Oh, my God.
I think I'm fading away.
Scott, you have no legs. Stop it.
Oh.
But what if they